Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering. Hello, please. This episode is with a truly extraordinary guest. One of you, actually, a listener, got in touch to recommend a particularly interesting guest to me. And that happens all the time, but in this case, oh my God, did the guest seem particularly amazing. Not only that, but she said yes. So I'm hoovering here with Pip Hare, an incredible record-making British yachtswoman and journalist who completed the solo round-the-world race, the Vendée Globe, in 2020 in 95 days. Whoa, sailing around the world on her own. Yes, please. And as you can imagine, I had a lot of questions about how you would eat during that. First things first, though, I just want to say thank you for listening to my podcast. If you want to do it a favour, you can tell other people about it. When I say it, I mean me. One way to tell other people about it is verbally. One way is on the social medias. The podcast is on there, at The Hoovering Pod, on Twitter, Instagram. It's on Facebook even. You can give it a 5-star review. That helps people find it. And subscribe to it. That makes everyone's life easier. If you've got spare money and want to support the podcast financially, you can do that too. Go to patreon.com/The Hoovering Pod and you'll see where I will swap you a brilliant podcast-related gubbins for your hard-earned cash from as little as £2 a month for things like guest recipes and exclusive content. If you want to throw the podcast a one-off amount, you can do that through Acast Supporter. If you want to try Oddbox, which is where I get my wonky fruit and veg from that supermarkets have rejected or was surplus, if you're in or around London, you can get a tenner off your first ever box using a link that's either in my podcast notes, along with links to everything interesting we mentioned in this podcast, or it's in the bio of the podcast Twitter account. I already said it's at The Hoovering Pod, which makes it, I think, about £2 or £3 for your first ever box, which is a bit good, isn't it? Right, let's go. Pip and I hoovered over Zoom, and to bring home the reality of eating as a solo yachts wizard, she was kind enough to send me in advance some of her special extra light freeze-dried full or whole-on actual proper lunch that you get like in a bag that you pour boiling water into, that sort of business. So we're both having the same one of that for lunch. Sadly not at sea, in our respective homes. Oh God, I had so much to ask. Are you in Brighton, are you?
Paul.
Yeah, my sister lives in Brighton.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm from Swanage.
Are you really?
Yeah. What a small world. Are you from Dorset?
Not originally, no. I'm from East Anglia, so I was born in London, grew up in Cambridgeshire, but I've been living here for about 7 years. I think it's home now. I think
I think that counts totally.
Yeah.
Oh, lovely. I didn't realize you lived in Poole. I'm very homesick at the moment, so for the sea, actually, funnily enough.
I went swimming the other day.
Oh,
freezing.
God.
Did you have a wetsuit or are you just hard as nails?
Oh, God, yeah. No, yeah. I'm not that stupid.
I got a swimming wetsuit to do the Great North Swim one year. And, well, first, actually, I bought the wrong wetsuit and tried to go for a swim on New Year's Day in a surfing wetsuit. And that was comical. You can't move your arms, really, can you? It was really hard. And I was shocked at how warm it kept my body, but how my face was so cold that it was unbearable. I couldn't keep my face in the water. I don't know how people manage
I can't get my head under, but I obviously I've been away for the winter, but yeah. the guys that I swim with, they've all kind of just kept doing it through the summer and the winter, and so they don't have
really?
A problem.
So yeah, I do know a lot of people who've for lockdown taken up outdoor swimming, seeing as it's one of the few things we can sort of get away with doing. Right, I've got my notes here. Thanks, by the way, so much for sending me sailor's food.
I really hope you're not too disappointed.
I'm not in this to have the best lunch of my life.
That's a good job then.
But it feels like this is as close as I'll ever get to testing astronaut food. Like it is amazing. You've been a professional sailor for 25 years. And you go on your own on a speed racing yacht, totally on your own, and go all around the world racing. And so you have to, I was happy to just spend an hour listening to what you eat, but is it mainly this then, freeze-dried meals?
Yeah, it is. I mean, so there's a couple of things we have to think about. One is weight is really important.
Yeah.
The Vendée Globe was 13 weeks, and so I had to take 13 weeks worth of food. And anything heavy slows the boat down.
Yeah.
So there's weight to consider, but also volume, because you've got to move all of this stuff around all the time, so it needs to be low volume. And then my cooking facilities on board, literally just a jet boil. That's all I've got.
Just a what, sorry?
A jet boil. So it's an aluminium mug, essentially, with fins on the bottom, and you attach a burner to it,
right?
And it heats water in 2 minutes. But that's all it does.
Surely the water's blooming heavy.
Well, I make water. So I've got
wow.
Desalinator, which takes seawater and forces it through a ceramic filter at ultra high pressure, and that just takes all the salt and the minerals out of the seawater, and you just get left with kind of really empty water. It's like distilled water almost.
Yeah, like well, it tastes quite funny, doesn't it, that very, very pure water?
Yeah, it doesn't taste like the water we know at all.
Yeah. And you think of water of tasting of nothing, but actually you realise it does have flavours when you try pure water. I'm only aware of it in the context of having spoken to people who make fancy salts, you know, for chefs, because as part of the process of getting the salt out of seawater, it's the same thing. But then they also are able to sell the pure water at the end of it to people to make tinctures, and you know it goes on Amazon as something that can cure you of all skin disease, etc., etc. Yeah, there's all sorts of things you can do with it. Yeah, I was gonna say, oh brilliant. Okay, so you turn seawater into drinkable water and then boil it and add it to very light pouches of food.
Yeah,
that is and I mean for 90 something days. That's all you eat.
Well, it was, yeah. Yeah, it was 95 days for this Vendée Globe. So, yeah.
Oh, so amazing. So, I'm in awe. I feel very honoured to be getting to talk to you. I don't know how I'd... Do you... So, I mean, I've got a million questions. I want to know... I just don't want to know everything. So, obviously, it's about minimising the weight of the cargo. But, and are there... Do you have to change your eating much in the run-up to it? Let's say in the long-term, the short-term run-up to a huge race like that, like a 13-week race like that. Do you have to... Would you start incorporating this types of thing into your day-to-day life in advance of it, just so that it doesn't send you too crazy quickly into it? Or is it actually a case of like, no, while I'm on land, I will eat nice, solid, whole 3D food, please?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. So I did change my diet in the year before the Vendée because I wanted to put on, I knew I was going to lose weight during the race. So I changed to a really high protein diet. It was horrible, actually. I really hated it.
To try and bulk up a bit before you went so that there was something to lose, basically. Crikey,
yeah,
okay.
To bulk up, to increase my muscle mass. Yeah. Also just to get heavier before the race. And then I did some trial days with my menus just to make sure that I wasn't taking food that I would really hate after 2 weeks.
Of course.
But other than that, no, you kind of just, yeah, I mean, it's not bad. It's actually not bad, but then you can't, you're so involved in what you're doing.
Yeah.
Food for me is, if it's hot, it gives me comfort because most of the time I'm cold. And obviously it staves off hunger, but the rest of the time it is a question of fueling.
Yeah.
But you know, having said that, freeze-dried food, especially vegetarian freeze-dried food, has come on in leaps and bounds in the last, like, 5 years.
Really? Because,
yeah, 5 years ago, you'd have, like, two things you could choose from, and that's it. So,
crikey. And have you always been vegetarian?
Since I was about 15.
Okay.
But on and off, like I went when I was in my early 20s, I lived in New Zealand for a bit and I think I would have died if I'd been a vegetarian there at that time.
It does feel like a global thing that actually the whole world has cottoned on to a million reasons to eat less meat, if not none meat. And it does feel like, I mean, it even used to be like you couldn't really go on holiday to France, or they'd say, yeah, we've got vegetarian stuff and it would be full of ham. And they'd be like, it's only ham.
I had the same thing. I lived in South America for a while and a vegetarian barbecue there was chicken.
Where in South America was that?
In Uruguay.
Oh, wow. I've never been to Uruguay.
It's a cool place. Really cool.
Yeah. I've only been to Central America, not South America. But it was the sorts of adventures where every third place I went to, I thought, yeah, I could live here. Yeah. Which doesn't happen on lots of sort of traveling, does it? As much as it does on holidays, because how nice it would be to live on holiday. But that's amazing. Okay, so I've got lots of questions based on the things you've just said. In terms of the bulking up and the lots of protein, one, how did you find that to achieve being vegetarian? I think a lot of people assume you can't really protein load if you are vegetarian, which obviously you can. I mean, I don't know if it's a case of actual putting protein dusts into things or whey and stuff like that. Or And did you have, well, you said building muscle mass, because I'm a weightlifter. So did you have to do sort of any weightlifting as part of bulking up?
Yes. Yeah.
And did you not enjoy it though, that bit?
I did. I really enjoyed it actually. First time ever.
Like, really?
For my whole career, I've always kind of had this, I guess this idea that to get sailing fit, I need to go sailing.
Yeah.
I'm a big runner as well. I love running and that gives me my endurance cardio, but on the Amoka, because that boat is so big, you know, it's 60 foot long with 600 square meters of sail, so that would cover three tennis courts when it was all laid out, and I have to manage that all on my own.
Yeah.
And so I kind of realized that with that boat I couldn't just rely on my inherent strength. I needed to build strength, but also get really good technique, because I was pulling around sails in their bags that weighed about 90 kilos.
Crikey. Well, there's loads of people that can't deadlift 90 kilos, let alone actually sort of hoik it around, you know, and whilst not breaking anything, you know, hoiking very heavy, precious cargo.
And that's the thing, is actually not injuring yourself. So I think where the weight training really, really helped me was actually on having good technique. But I did really enjoy that part of it. And when lockdown happened, I mean, I had to carry on training. So I just invested in a load of weights.
Great. Well, they got a lot more expensive, annoyingly, as well. Oh, are they?
They did, yeah. 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 So I'm going to carry on doing it for sure.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yes.
Oh, how amazing. Yeah, they just got really expensive during lockdown, to the extent where normally, you know, be sensible enough. I live in South East London, and it'd be like, I probably won't leave my like microphone and computer out if I'm going out like with the curtains open. And then actually in this last year, it's been a case of going, probably don't leave the barbell and the, and the 10s or 15s out, actually. Say scrumdiddlyumptious.
Hello!
And then you can be in my podcast.
Scrumdiddlyumptious.
Oh, I'm really glad you enjoyed the weightlifting. Did you experience times of... I mean, you must have experienced times of hunger. It's just over the length of time. The only thing I've got to compare it to in terms of adrenaline is... from a comedian's point of view or a performer's point of view, is doing the Edinburgh Festival or doing a very long theatre run, I suppose, for some types of actors, where you've got so much adrenaline that even if you're somebody who really cares and about food and loves food and thinks about food all the time, when you're that full of adrenaline, you don't as much. Like it does something to your appetite, doesn't it? It just sort of crushes it away a bit. But does that last over the course of all of those weeks, or is there a lag point in the middle sometimes? Are there ever times where... you had sort of a very conscious hunger for something you weren't able to have in that situation?
I guess there's a number of things about that. So one is that adrenaline is, it's present, it kind of just is, it fluctuates. So I would say there is an amount there all the time, but it spikes. And so, you know, at the start and I would say for the first 3 or 4 days, as you're really adjusting, you're just on hyper alert all the time. And actually, you know, I had a planned menu that I was supposed to stick to, and I was really, really struggling to eat all the food I was supposed to eat.
Oh, okay. Because you just wanted to get on with the sailing, I guess.
Yeah. Right? Well, yeah. And also it just... my mind was too, you know, my mind was too busy to think about eating. And so, you know, I didn't eat as much as I should have done. And then you kind of settle into it, and then your meals, you know, become, you're a lot more structured about it. And I made a conscious effort to try and eat all of my food every day. I had a 10-day rolling menu, so I wouldn't get too bored with it.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you get into another event. So my first massive storm in the Southern Ocean, when I literally stood, I was so excited / terrified. The boat was going faster than it had ever been before. And I must have stood for about a whole hour, just frozen, staring at the instruments, kind of with one hand on the ladder to get out of inside of the boat. And then the other hand kind of on the remote control for the autopilot. And I just didn't know what to do with myself, because I didn't know if I should be on deck. I didn't know if I should be down below. Your brain is saying, you've got to sleep, you've got to eat. This is going to be like this for 2 days, for 3 days.
And
almost paralyzed by this like intense kind of anxiety, adrenaline, excitement. But the longer that goes on, you know, something has to give. So eventually... yeah. It becomes normal, and you go, yes, I could do something to eat. And
well, also those feelings, I mean, that intensity of whatever, serotonin release, fight or flight mode, you know, sustained over an hour of that. Also, I mean, ironically, as much as it's like the most distracting thing from hunger ever, is absolutely burning calories, essentially, isn't it? I mean, it's...
yeah, I mean, I lost 8 kilos on this race.
Fucking hell! Oh, my God!
I'd planned to lose 5, maybe. But I didn't realise how much weight I'd lost, because in the Southern Ocean, like, the temperature is sort of 5 or 6 degrees, and that's inside and outside, because the door was open all the time. And you're just... you're covered in clothes. I changed my clothes every 10 days if I was lucky. Changed the bottom layer every 10 days. You know,
a lot of people have been living like that anyway in lockdown, Pip. That's the one bit of training I've probably done by accident for one of your races.
It's all very relatable. But I just didn't, you know, when you don't look at your body, when your body... it's doing what you expect it to do, but you don't actually ever look at it, and you're just, you know, wearing waterproofs all the time, then there's no point of reference to see that you've lost weight. And my face was changing, but it was changing every day. And so,
also, you're too busy to stop for a selfie every half an hour. So it's not like you're sort of taking, you've got bigger things to worry about. Oh, God. But also, if you're hemorrhaging weight like that, then that's going to make you even colder, right?
Well, I think I'm acclimatized. One of the things I was really worried about with the Southern Ocean was being cold, because I hate it.
Right.
But I wasn't massively cold, which is weird.
Oh, I mean, I'm going to get boring saying it, but I think you're amazing. okay, well, I mean, if anything else springs to mind, and we'll try these, do you think these are cooked yet?
I think they probably are. Give it a good stir.
Have you got the same as me? I've got Mexican-style quinoa.
I thought I would eat the same as you, because otherwise...
Oh, my God. Oh, I think I'm really going to like it. It does look really comforting. I'm going to take a picture of mine.
It is comfort food. I would say it's comfort food.
I mean, that's exactly what you need when you're freezing it out on your boat. Woohoo! It smells good. Tomato-y. Sweet corn, kidney beans. See, red quinoa, normal quinoa.
There's a bit of peppers in there as well, I think.
Oh, is there? Lovely job. Mmm. I like eating out of a bag as well.
But you have to...
What do you do with your litter out there?
You have to wash it.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, I take it back with me, but...
I bet some people just pop it in the sea, do they?
Well, we do. All the boats get inspected at the end.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, if you were chucking rubbish in the sea, you'd get disqualified for sure.
That's so good to know from a care of the planet point of view.
It's in international racing rules.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'm so happy. Wow, good guys. Good guys bothering that in the rules.
What do you think?
I actually really like it.
You were made to sail then, weren't you?
Shall I have a go at it?
Yeah.
I'd be fine at the bulking up bit. I don't know if I'd manage to lose 8 kilos. I'd be distracted by how peckish I was. You see, if you could, do you reckon you could... I'm trying to think of really light chocolate that you could sneak into your backpack. Just one Kit Kat chunky ready for...
I didn't take any chocolate with me at all.
Yeah.
Because I can't control myself.
Oh, I understand. I really like it. It's really salty. Is that on purpose?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just to mineral you up.
Yeah.
You also sent me a peppermint tea, like a legend, and my favourite one, that pucker one.
Oh, it's good, isn't it?
Delish. But it's really nice. It's a perfect drink to have with a super salty... lunch from a silver bag. I feel like I'm on a camping holiday, having it out the bag. This is the closest I've had to a holiday for years.
This one actually is quite good. I think I did get a little bit fed of Mexican style couscous / quinoa by the end. Mm-hmm. There are a couple that tasted really similar.
Mm-hmm.
I was a bit fed up of those.
Like, guys, I've been to Mexico and it doesn't all taste the same. They've got a lot of different flavours in Mexico. And I like it. No, it's doing the job, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm into it. And it's not like one note. I mean, basically, I'm a really big fan of salty things, far more than sweet things. I want to know, you're saying that about chocolate, this made me wonder. Because I find with chocolate, I don't care about sweet things very much, but I do love chocolate. I have to be in the mood. And I think, you know, as a general philosophy, I think people should eat in a way that makes them happy and not be very... That I don't believe in sort of punishment and reward and rules and all of that stuff. It's, for most people, quite a miserable way to live. But I find that with chocolate, having said that, for me, if I leave it ages, just coincidentally, you know, I didn't fancy chocolate for ages. If you don't have chocolate for a long, long time and then you have chocolate, it tastes like something a wizard has invented. Like, it doesn't take long of not having it, you know, maybe a couple of months for when you have some for it to be like, it's like it's the first time you had it again. So I can imagine there were some things when you got back Well, when you do get back from your long, long races, that just taste extraordinary, do they?
What I really crave is always fresh fruit and cherry tomatoes. Anything that has, you know, a huge amount of juice inside it, or just, you know, the way a cherry tomato bursts in your mouth when you open it. And when I got off, so they asked me when I got in from the Vendée, they asked me what I wanted as my first meal, and I just said fruit. And I had a plate with sliced mango and pineapple and kiwi. And I shocked the people who were in the room with me. I literally kind of put my mouth close to the plate and just hoovered it all in, just in a breath. It was so, just to have something that moisture and that flavour was just, I miss it so much.
And actually, if you've been having kind of salty, hearty, comforting, hot food, all those fruits you've described as well have got a really gorgeous acidic freshness to them, haven't they? Even cherry tomatoes, they're all things that, you know, if you were having in a non your sport context, you might even add a salty component or a creamy component because of how acidic they are. And actually, they're the antithesis. So, I can imagine the sweet, glorious relief of those acidy sweet fruits after that long a stint at sea. And you said you're from East Anglia. I'd love to know about eating growing up for you, whatever shapes or forms that took.
So I'm from a reasonably large family. There's four kids. Mm-hmm. We're all quite close. There's 6 years between us. And so eating was always, you know, a family affair, always sitting down around the table. It was a bit of a battleground, everyone eating, you know, as much as they could, as quickly as possible.
Get in now while you've got the chance.
And I guess, I suppose for sort of early family food, I don't remember particularly, other than lots of casseroles and roast dinner on a Sunday. And, you know, if we were really lucky, we had sausages and mash, which was like a favourite.
Nice.
And then I remember when we all got to the teens, we got a microwave oven. And I think my mum worked when we were kids, as well as my dad. And I think she just, at one stage, she just got utterly fed up with cooking for a load of ungrateful teenagers. And the microwave meal arrived in our house. But it wasn't the go to the supermarket and buy a microwave meal. It was the leftovers from whatever meal plated up. And then we all fairly rapidly learned to cook ourselves.
Didn't you start sailing at 16 or something as well, though?
So that's sort of when that was when I really got my passion for it.
Right.
I'd been sailing since I was a baby, because my grandfather had like a 24-foot wooden boat, and we used to go down to spend time with him, and then my mum and dad inherited it. And so I've grown up around the water, but not really hardcore sailing. It was more kind of just, you know, going ashore and making rope swings and dinghies and that sort of thing. And when I was 16, I went on a sailing holiday that was sort of by young people, for young people, and I just fell in love with the freedom, really. You know, when you're 16, you want to do loads and you can't do anything. But somebody sticks you in a boat and says you're in control of where it goes, how fast you go, how slow you go, you're responsible for the risk. You know, it's a really big thing to give a 16-year-old, and that was it, I was hooked.
Also, it's glorious to hear. And also at 16, you're, in the same way that, you know, when 17-year-olds learn how to drive, they're pretty fearless. You have such a tiny concept of your own mortality as a teenager. It's one of the great things, one of the few great things, really, about being a teenager. Like you say, other than that, you have so little agency, but you're so desperate for it. But that actually, you know, what a great time to be taking up something that requires so much bravery and or like fearlessness, I suppose, about scariness of it, the danger of it. But amazing to have just maintained that into being a grown up. Because I found I've got scaredier driver as I've got older. Have you got more fear as you've got older, or not actually, because you've just carried on doing it the whole time?
I am frightened by things, but there aren't a lot of things that I wouldn't try.
Wicked.
So in 2018, though, I was knocked off my bike, and I'm scared of riding on the road now. Like, right. I do it, but I hate it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, other than that, I'll pretty much give anything a go.
You're brilliant.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
What's the swankiest thing you've ever eaten?
God. I don't know that I have done much swanky eating, to be honest.
No.
I mean, I've eaten in some really amazing places.
Like, yeah, I was going to say, Paul's got some snazzy places now, hasn't it?
It has, yeah, we've got some nice places here, and I've been and had, I think one of the nicest places I've had lunch ever is a restaurant in Antigua, on the place on Pigeon Beach in Antigua, and just going there and having Sunday lunch with a really cold bottle of rosé, and that's nice.
Yes, please. Have you ever accidentally eaten anything that's not food?
I'm sure loads and loads of things. Yeah, loads of, I like, I'm constantly eating the stickers off apples, but why are there stickers on apples? It shouldn't
That's
be
so
there.
True. It's so true. I had a jacket potato last night, and I found like a little bit of a sticker in my ratatouille on the side of that. I think they're even putting stickers on some jacket potatoes now. It's funny, isn't it? Three-year-olds love a sticker. The rest of us, we're fine without a sticker.
Yeah.
I trust you. I trust you from the label what type of apple it is.
Yes. But the other thing is that sometimes we, if there's a problem on the boat and there's water inside the boat, sometimes you need to know whether it's salt water or fresh water.
So I have to test it.
I have tasted bilge water quite a lot.
Oh, no. Amazing. I often ask people if they've ever had a patch where they eat the same thing every day, but of course you have. You've had to have a pouch for lunch every day for months, actual months. Is there anything in normal day-to-day life that you would say that you eat in a particularly ritualistic way? Like there's a lot of people, the stereotype is Cadbury's cream eggs, isn't it? Like, how do you eat yours? But I mean, anything from as simple as like, there's a particular food that you think demands to be eaten particularly slowly, or I know lots of people are quite funny about how they eat a Twix, anything like that?
So I can't eat food slowly. I really enjoy my food.
Yay.
And if it's cold food, then you should eat it when it's cold. and it's hot food, you should eat it when it's hot. And I don't like, lukewarmy kind of stuff. So hot food, I tend to wolf down. But Twix, without a doubt, the only way to eat a Twix is to bite the biscuit off the bottom and then roll the toffee and the chocolate into a ball and then eat the ball.
Music to my bloody ears. That you're correct. That is the only way to eat a Twix.
Yeah.
I was taught that as a child by one of my mum's friends, Judy Lungmus. And she also taught me how on a walk to spear a cow pat with a stick and spin
good
it
woman.
Off. Yeah, really good woman. She taught me all sorts of borderline cheeky things like that. And I've got into arguments with people that don't eat a Twix in the right way. It's so right. Why would you leave the biscuit till last when you could effectively have, you know, a child's fist's worth of just the caramel and the chocolate?
And the biscuit is just the vessel for that, let's be honest.
Yeah. It's a bed for the important person
exactly.
that sleeps on it. Have you ever used a food as a weapon or as part of a prank? If you've got 3 siblings, was it?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I love it if that was the end of your answer. Yes. But that's actually, for legal reasons, all I can say.
I remember being in Italy in a sailing regatta, dinghy sailing regatta, that we all went for a dinner in a local chateau or something. Every course was grey. It was the most, you know, Italy is famous for its food, but it was the most vile food ever.
No.
Every course was grey. And so, you know, everything got a bit rowdy. And that was probably the biggest food fight I've ever been in ever.
Amazing.
Grey missiles in every direction.
Just the dry items or all items, including wet items?
It got to wet items by the end as well, yeah.
I can't imagine going for a rubbish dinner in Italy.
Disappointing.
Sorry for you. 5-second rule, yes or no?
Depends where I am. 5-second rule at home, yes. 5-second rule on the inside of the boat, probably not.
Really? No. Gets really grubby, does it, in there?
Well, so I don't have a toilet, so I have to wee in a bucket. And the bucket is in my living accommodation where I eat.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. To be honest, I think anyone who's answered yes very quickly to the 5-second rule on here, probably if they were asked, what if it had been rolled in your own wee, would say actually no. Actually, can I answer again? Hangover, what are you having?
Oh, it has to be stodge. Huge amounts of toast and maybe proper chip shop chips.
Oh, yeah.
Fried egg too.
Oh, yeah. Fried egg on toast next to some chip shop chips. I might do that next hangover. What an excellent idea. And nothing on there is, the ratio of colour in that plate as well goes from white to beige to, depending on the quality of your egg, orange, doesn't it, as well? You've got such a limited rainbow. it sounds bloody delish. I love a fried egg. I haven't had one for ages.
Oh, fried egg on top of lentils is really good.
Oh, yes. That's a great shout. I've got in this lockdown to... actually, less so now that spring has sprung, but I get a fruit and veg box and I don't know what's coming in it. It's like one where you get surprise items. And I've got so many different root vegetables through the autumn for so long. So many turnips, so many beetroots and rainbow beetroots and stuff that I've got into trying to find other things to do with them than soups or roasts. So like grating them and making a rösti.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and squeezing all the liquid out and then, yeah, and making it really crispy. And a fried egg on that is lovely as well.
Yes, they belong together.
Yeah. Excellent. Have you ever eaten? Well, this might. You might. It was. You were a teenager last time you ate meat. But have you ever eaten anything while it was still alive?
Oh no.
No. No. Fair play. No. And this is someone who does such a survivally type job. If it was no other option, would you eat a person?
No.
Really?
No.
No. No.
100% no.
Rather starve to death than eat a person?
I'd just find something else to eat.
What if someone had cooked them into a sausage roll that just smelt like a sausage roll and you were starving?
I'd eat the pastry from around the outside.
Yeah. Very definitive. It's a very absolute answer. It's, you know, it's a very fun question to ask. Well, it's obviously a fun question to ask anyone. Otherwise, I wouldn't be asking it. But also, I really like that. I like it when you get very extreme yes or no answer to that. And I have had some extreme yeses. I've had people go, yes, and this is how I butcher them. You're like, oh, God. You're very welcome to say no thank you to answering the question even, but I ask almost everyone that I talk to, but would you say that you've always had a reasonably good relationship with eating, or has it ever been complicated at any point?
I think most people have a slightly complicated relationship with it.
Almost everyone, I would say.
And I comfort eat. And, you know, I think at the times in my life when I've really been struggling with my mental health, then I overeat. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that that's... I don't think there's anything... I think that's pretty universal and normal and not unhealthy. Like, I think there's so much joy to be taken from eating that it's... And especially during like hard times, it's like I remember a therapist saying to me once, where there is joy, take joy. And I think it's quite a nice outlook to
often be found in the fridge.
Yes. On that note, it's not in the fridge, but you've also sent me some freeze-dried fruit for pud.
Yeah.
So I want to taste that. I've got lychee, peach and raspberry. That is pretty snazzy.
I sent you that one because I don't like lychees and I'm trying to get rid of them.
Oh! Are the lychees the ones that look like a little bumpy red eyeball?
Yes, exactly. Oh, yeah, they're wrong. They're really wrong.
They're wrong? Mm. They taste a bit soapy, as I remember. I don't think I've had one since being a child.
They do look a bit like the raspberry, so it's quite hard to work out what's what.
I'm going to shake a few items out, just onto the table, like a trollop. I'm going to photograph these as well, and then we'll see how we go. They're quite beautiful, actually.
Yeah.
I've just finished watching the Great British Pottery Throwdown series on Channel 4 about amateur potters, and it made me think of that. I reckon that one might be...
That's a lychee. Yeah.
Right. Okay, I'm saving it to last. I'm trying raspberry first. Mmm. Yum. Oh, it's so tangy.
It is.
That's a nice...
Yeah.
That's a nice tangy treat for if everything you're eating is all salty on the boat, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really woken me up. That looks like an apple. That's a bit of apple, surely.
Pear, isn't it?
Oh. Not on the list. Oh, it's really nice. That's really nice. That's a bit sweeter. It's just really boring for you watching me try bits of... I'm expecting sweetness from this peach. Mmm. I've got a five-year-old and he is going to love these. This stuff's marketed very much as like a healthy kid snack.
Yeah.
And it works in the sense that there's a cupboard and like... It's the cupboard where any chocolate or biscuits or crisps would be. And he's like, I'm hungry. And you go, all right, do you want a bit of toast? Do you want an apple? And he'll go, I want something from the cupboard. And the only thing from the cupboard, like the trick has been to get loads of stuff like this and put it in the cupboard. And so psychologically, this counts as something from the cupboard.
It's a treat.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to try a lychee. I remember when lychees first came to Swanage.
I didn't know they made it there yet.
They are. There's been a lychee in Swanage. It's probably, to be honest, it's probably been forced back out again by some really old people with sort of really ruddy knuckles and pitchforks.
Yeah.
I'll get some stick from my stepdad for saying that. Right. I remember my nana buying some lychees from a grocer's called Country Mile on the High Street in Swanage, and it was really exciting.
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh. Well, I'm quite happy.
Oh, hang on. It is weird.
Mm. I mean,
I don't dislike it, but it is weird. It is a bit... It sort of tastes of soap and herbs.
Mm. I had to pick them all out and throw them over the side.
Really?
Yeah, I really don't like them.
Whoa. I wonder if you've given any types of fish in the sea a new lychee addiction.
Quite possibly. I might have started a new genetic hybrid.
I didn't mind it, but I don't mind it in the context of all those other familiar flavours. I don't know if there needs to be a fruit that tastes of herbs, though. I can see your point. I probably would have endured them and wolfed them all up. Thank you for sending me... do you know what, actually? As I'm saying that, I am becoming more aware of an aftertaste, Pip.
I did warn you.
That's a bit much, isn't it? I can't remember the last time I ate something where... the sort of negative side of its flavour just increases over time. Oh, dear. Tell me about a time, if there ever was one, where you ate something out of awkwardness or embarrassment.
I'm a vegetarian, and the only food in the whole world that I absolutely will not eat, I'd really struggle to get it past my lips, mushrooms. They just, right. I mean, I hate them.
Mm-hmm.
And I write for a sailing magazine, and part of my work for them is I have to go off and test different boats.
Right.
And I went to Sweden, and I did a 2-day boat test on this quite flash cruising boat. And the owner of the company came with me. It was just me and him. And turns out, anyway, he's a bit of a feeder, and he spent the whole time cooking and saying, what's the next meal, what's the next meal? Nobody had told, well, I hadn't told him that he hadn't asked. Nobody had asked what I ate. And so literally I had 3 meals with him. All of them were meat-based.
And, oh, no!
And one of them was pork and mushroom.
And you just put, did you just eat it?
I was too embarrassed not to. I just, I kind of pushed it around my plate. I hid it under, but you're on a boat, you know, there's no, we weren't putting the stuff over the side. It goes in the bin. You know, I was desperately trying to do the washing up so you couldn't see what I wasn't eating. But in the end, I had to eat some of it because we couldn't go shopping. Like we were, that was it. That was all the food that was on board. And it was just me and him. And I felt so awkward. So I ate it. Yeah.
Oh, my crumbs alive. There's nothing worse than in a work context as well. Effectively, your employer and trapped out at sea with them for 2 days with nothing but pork and mushrooms.
And he just kept coming too. He just was obsessed with feeding me. It's awful.
Oh, no. Oh, dear. Yeah. I'd have probably been tempted to have faked a tummy problem.
Not so good on a boat either, though.
Yeah, not so good. Yeah, again, there's so few options. I imagine you did run through all of them. You're like, I don't want to tell him I've got the shits. He's trapped on a boat with me, a really posh boat that's his boat. Oh, God. I love it. Right. Well, I've kept you for ages. I've loved this. Thank you so much for letting me inside your amazing brain.
It's a real pleasure.
And for sending me this futuristic food. It feels so futury.
Mmm, I'm in my tongue.
A terrible army of 7.68 billion ghosts, one for each alive person, decides to haunt us, one-to-one haunting, by standing next to us and drumming for 24 hours a day, loud. At first, it's quite fun. Quite a lot of dancing and stuff happens. But after an hour or so, people start to go genuinely bloody mad. And riots start breaking out. Violence and crying everywhere. It's a disaster. The ghosts agree to pack it in, but at least not to start before 9 a.m. But only if you, and weirdly it does have to be you, agree to finally carry the Elgin marbles back to Greece all by yourself, one by one, without a break. It sounds impossible, but you do it! You're a hero. Your award is a place in the whole of the planet's hearts for saving us from this one-to-one noisy haunting. And your reward in the moment, though, is the feast of your dreams. And bearing in mind, that was very heavy work, that Elgin Marbles, and you didn't get a break, so you are starving. So it's almost the opposite of a last meal in the sense that you couldn't be happier and you couldn't be hungrier. And this is the feast of your dreams. It's a fantasy feast. I don't want anything you choose for this feast to have any consequences. I don't care about ethics. I certainly don't care about health, any of that. It doesn't even have to be possible, the answers to this. I'd love to know, in a fantasy scenario like that, what you'd eat, what you'd drink, and if there's a who, with, and where, then who, with, and where, please.
Okay. So enjoying food for me is actually more about the company than the food.
That's really lovely. I love,
there's nothing that makes me happier than having like 10 friends around to dinner, you know, all the kids sitting there, conversations all around the table. So I would want a massive dining room table with like all of my friends and family from all over the world there. They all get flown in.
Yes.
And then we just have the biggest roast dinner ever.
Yes.
So we've got potatoes, parsnips, carrots, cauliflower, cheese, leeks, roast beetroot, peas. You've got to have peas.
Mm.
All down the table. And then everyone can have a choice of whatever they want. They can have meat, they can have fish, they can have just a big bowl of gravy.
Yes.
And the meal would go on for a day at least.
Yes, a banquet.
And I get to stand up and just keep walking around the table so I can sit with different friends at different times. And that would make me really happy.
Oh, I love it! Well, I think that's going to ring true with lots of people who are missing their families at the moment.
Yeah.
What a lovely answer. Thank you so much for talking to me and for your fascinating insights.
Thank you for asking me.
Delicious. What an amazing woman Pip is. It was an honour to steal her time and her special sailing lunch that day. Find her on social media. You can track her races and all her other projects, see all the things she's up to there. Pip Hare, and the hare is H-A-R-E, and she's Pip Hare Ocean Racing on Instagram and Twitter. Or as ever, there are links in the podcast notes. As there are links in the podcast notes to everything interesting that we mentioned in this episode, if you want to support the podcast financially, you are so welcome. Become a patron. Or go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod or on Acast Supporter, you can do a one of 10 or a 5 or something. Bit of fun. Follow us on social media at The Hoovering Pod. Follow me at Jessica Foster Q. I have got tour dates rescheduled. I've got some London ones coming out soon for a bit of a biggy thing I'm doing with my show Hench that was cut short at the beginning of the pandemic. And I'm seeing it out with like, I think, 8 official tour dates, the end of July, beginning of August. All of that information and the means to send me anything longer of a tweet, which is an email, is all on my website, jessicafosterq.com. Thanks again to Pip for being such an amazing guest and for talking to me. Huge thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Hoovering is produced by Emma Corsham and the music is by Mike Greenway. Until next week, happy hoovering.
Hi,
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.